Hello. Welcome to Working Class and Education, Labor 316. My name is Matt, Matt McGarvey. You can call me Matt. I'm totally into that. I prefer it. And one of the major themes of this course is the option that I think that we have between choosing to be human, regular people who are capable of sharing mutual respect and forming respectful relationships versus adopting the roles that institutions like schooling give to us. So I'm cool with you calling me Matt. I'm a lecturer for this course. I'm not a professor. I mean, I know what you mean when you call me professor, and I know that often you mean that, you know, respectfully, and so I appreciate that. That's cool. But technically speaking, I am not a professor. I'm a lecturer. Professor is it's a position that some people hold in departments, and I don't. We're going to talk more about that sort of stuff as we go along. So I wanted just to make a short recording, giving you a sense of what this class is. What did you get yourself into, and what are you going to have to do? And I also wanted to make a comment about a certain, I don't know, paradox almost. We'll come across the notion of a paradox in education with James Baldwin later. But a paradox or a contradiction about doing this class online. This class is supposed to be really discussion-oriented, really human, really egalitarian. We're supposed to sit in a circle. This is what we just did in the semester that just finished, and yet here we are doing it online in a highly anonymous fashion. So I'll give you a sense what the class is, and then come back to that theme and maybe offer a comment or two about how we could at least mitigate the problem of us being online. I mean, I know there's upsides to us being online. I don't have to drive for 4 months to school. That's really good for my back. And you're able to work your job or jobs and still get credit. That's good for you too. I understand these things. There are also, of course, downsides to never seeing one another and to having a thing called education in which we never look at one another or have a conversation. Anyway, let's go from the top. This class is called Working Class and Education. When I first ran this class was only last semester, so it's still having some of the wrinkles ironed out and stuff. But on the first day of last semester, when I stood up to introduce this class, what I said was, you don't recognize it right now. I'm standing in the front of the class and I'm looking at everybody in their neat, orderly little rows, right? You don't recognize it, probably most of you, but we are engaged right now in a ritual. And it is a ritual that y'all have been doing and that I have been doing for decades. This ritual could be called schooling. It's a ritual, meaning it's got repeat components. It's got aspects of behavior which are highly formalized. Y'all come into the class, you sit down, you don't talk, you ideally look at me while I talk, maybe you nod, you know, you take some notes. When we really get into the meat of it, if this is a standard class, I'm delivering the information with my PowerPoint from the front of the room there. And you're diligently taking notes on your computer or your notebook. And, you know, this will all pay off during another major ritual, the exam, when you will be able to show me that you internalized the things that I said to you. And this will, depending on the degree to which it happens, this will determine your grade. And it'll determine whether we will say that learning has taken place. So this is a ritual, and it involves a lot of stuff that we don't talk about, generally speaking. And it involves a whole lot of beliefs and theories that we don't typically identify. In this class, we're going to unpack all of this, right? So I talk, you're quiet. That's part of the ritual. We don't talk about how I talk and you're quiet, and that's part of how it's so deeply entrenched in the ritual. Most of us don't think about schooling as a ritual because we've done it since we were like 4 years old. Show up, sit down, be quiet, listen to the teacher, do what the teacher says, hand in the work that the teacher says, and repeat the things that the teacher has said And be evaluated, get used to being evaluated, become good at being evaluated. If you're really on top of it, one day you too will be able to evaluate others. You know, these are all aspects of the ritual of schooling. So it's harder now to stand in front of you because I'm not standing in front of you. It's impossible for me to stand in front of you because I don't even know where you are or when you are. So we are dislodged from one another, both in space and in time. But I know that you are familiar with this ritual of schooling, and that's what this class here is about. It's about unpacking schooling and suggesting that schooling has, I don't know, like a shadow double. It has an other. It has like a doppelganger. And we could call this other of schooling education. That's the major organization of this class, is to say that usually we conflate, that is, we stick together, education and schooling as if they were the same thing. And we will even engage in social political actions and campaigns to get more access to schooling, and as we do so, we'll call it education. And yet, I think if we look more carefully at what schooling is and does, we'll see that it's quite distinct from education. And in many instances, it is diametrically opposed to education, such that doing education in schooling, for those of us who are liberation pedagogues or radical pedagogues, these are some terms we'll learn with Paulo Freire and Miles Horton later in this class, such that people like us who insist on doing education in schools are often fired or reprimanded and disciplined for having done education under schooling. Schooling is very into order, discipline, informational transfer, repetition, and certainly maybe its favorite thing, schooling's favorite thing, measurement, evaluation, and on the basis of that, the construction of hierarchies. Maybe you never thought about that, but this is the time to do it. You know, what are grades for? Teachers who are well-meaning maybe will tell you, you know, you earn your grade. I don't give you your grade. You earn your grade. And so, you know, your grade is your problem. And the harder you work, the better your grade is going to be. Okay, you know, maybe, maybe not. But for whom is the grade existing at all? Who uses grades is my question. And I think the answer to that question, because you're not here in the space where I'm at, and you're not here at this time when I'm speaking, but I think that the answer to the question, who uses grades, is bosses, employers, other schooling institutions. It is grades, and you all know this for sure, it is grades along with a few other metrics that will determine whether you get hired or not, whether you get into grad school or not, right? So the grade is being set up, the metric is being used in order to differentiate a population and to say, out of this population of people, many of whom may be applying for a job with you, all of whom, and this is the working class, this is our next lecture and topic that we need to move on to. In a working class situation, every individual needs to get a job or else they'll starve, right? And that's not true for everybody in the world. There are people who are not working class and who do not ever have to get a job. The money that they get is not coming from wages. But that's very far removed from people at Dominguez Hills, most people at Dominguez Hills. And it's pretty far removed also for most of us teaching in the high schools and the colleges. We also are working class people who need to get paid, right? And we are in our positions in part because of the metrics and the grades that we supposedly earned. So schooling is all about this stuff. It's about the ritual in the classroom. It's about the idea that there are experts, and you can tell that they're experts Because they've got degrees. You know, I got a PhD. So it must be that, like, whatever I say to you is going to be really heavy and serious, right? Because I'm, like, guaranteed. It's like the Elon Musk world, right? I've got one of those little check marks next to my name. I'm certified, man, because I got a PhD. The idea of schooling is that the person at the front of the room is an expert, and they are more qualified than you, probably, like, in general. Now, notice there's, like, a lot of conceit and falsity. There's falsehood built into these rituals. You know, I would even go so far as to say the ritual of schooling, along with the rituals of other, what we'll come in this class to call ideological state apparatuses, is actually just there in order to conceal a whole bunch of contradictions, in order to prevent you from understanding the lies, falsifications, and contradictions which are all around you. Schooling, in my opinion, is not our ally. It's something we have to deal with because we do have to get those jobs, granted, you know, and I'll do what I can to help you get that grade, get that job. But it's not something that is good in itself. It's something that works for the boss. It's there to sort you and say, this person can show up on time. This person has good hygiene. This person talks nice to others. This one completes their work on time. This one, very orderly. This one, very good at time management. This one, very good with language. Maybe they are a writer or an advertiser or a manager of some kind. Good at using language, good at organizing other people, right? Like, so schooling is that system which is put in place to cultivate these features that you have in some degree and that maybe you could have in a greater degree for your being placed into the so-called economy. Schooling serves the boss, and schooling serves future schooling, right? You're not going to get into graduate school if you never showed up for most of your college and you had really bad grades in high school, and you're about to flunk out of college. They won't let you into graduate school. They are selecting. Schooling performs selective functions. Now, education, I really think that we can distinguish from schooling. And next week, or in our second section, when we move on to talking about Plato and Dewey, the reason to look at these philosophers is to try to define education independent of schooling. Education isn't just what happens when you go into a schoolroom. It happens a lot of places. Maybe it happens best outside of schools. And if you want to test this one, just real quick, ask yourself and try to reflect back, go over your memories. Have I ever learned anything not from school? You can go even further than that and say, have I ever learned anything without anybody teaching me? I learned not to touch the flame because I stuck my finger in it too many times. I learned that I need a smaller Phillips head screwdriver because the one that I was using, or a bigger Phillips head screwdriver, the one that I was using kept stripping out the screw. Right? There's all kinds of learning, you know, acquisition of skills and acquisition of knowledge, like true propositions about the world, that happen outside institutional confines. So schooling can't take credit for the phenomenon of learning. Oh, and here's a passing thing that I bet you didn't know if you haven't looked into this. We'll look at this when we get to the writer Johnson later in this class. Schooling, as we know it, is only about 200 to 250 years old. As is the modern nation state. So many of the institutions which organize our everyday lives and which we take for granted as this is just how it is, right? You know, people always have schools, people always have governments, people always have police. Well, actually, no, no, and no. These institutions are historical and they're quite new, and they emerge as aspects of an industrialized capitalist society. So in our class, which is a labor studies class, we are looking at schooling as a function within an industrialized capitalist society. We'll even look more broadly than that. We'll look on a couple of occasions at the role that schooling plays in state socialist societies, which is basically the same. The ultimate term that we'll use for the function of schooling is that it is social reproduction. It's a way in which new generations of people can be brought to operate all the different industries that all together compose the productive base of the country. It's the reproduction of workers who will have the skills to do that. So that means they have new skills, not just the ones that their parents and their grandparents had. Some of the same skills, got to be able to show up on time. Some new skills, maybe informational, computational skills that previous generations didn't have. And in addition to that, something that all workers must have from an employer's perspective, that is a willingness to submit and to do as you're told. That's what schooling is. Education, learning, changing the frame of your understanding is something different. Just as a heads up, when we look at Plato, I'll give you Plato's Allegory of the Cave, kind of the most famous moment of the most famous philosophy book, like in the world, Plato's Republic, the Allegory of the Cave. In the Allegory of the Cave, we are shown images of some people who have spent their entire lives looking at shadows and listening to reflections and believing that these are the realest things in the world. And we're shown the possibility of their turning around and realizing that the things that they've been seeing are only shadows, and they are cast by a combination of objects and light. The things that they have been hearing are only echoes, and they have been produced by voices somewhere in the distance. So on this model, education, which is basically like leaving the cave, leaving a situation where reality is constructed for us in a false fashion. Notice how political that is, because it's true that reality is constructed for us in false fashion by all kinds of interests and actors. Education for Plato is the turning of the soul, shifting so that we no longer are the kind of people who believe whatever shows up in front of us is what's real, and such that we instead become the kind of people who say, okay, well, whatever's showing up in front of me is an appearance. I wonder what is the reality behind it. If I become the kind of person who is accustomed to treating that which appears as appearance and seeking out the reality behind it, in this sense, I'm educated. Or to put the same relation in another way, more familiar for science-y people, if I become the kind of person who no longer accepts whatever happens as like inevitable and it is what it is, man, but instead I say, well, I wonder why it is what it is, you know? If I, instead of accepting effects without questions, if I become the kind of person who, confronted with effects, immediately says, hey, these have got to be effects, right? Everything is caused, right? What are the causes of these effects? Let me seek out the causes. I see what you're saying, but why are you saying it, man? I see what they're putting it on the news, but who's putting it on the news, and why are they putting that? Right, like those kinds of questions, which I think are critical, could be defined as critical questions. Angela Davis, halfway through our class, will say, those are the signs of an educated mind. The person who looks for reality behind appearance, the person who seeks out causes for effects, is an educated person. Now notice that schooling, it could facilitate moments like that. And I bet, you know, like in maybe in your best experiences, something like that might have happened. But it can very well happen without that moment happening. Right. And I imagine in most of your classes, certainly in most of the classes that I've taken, mostly I don't even remember them. I don't remember what I learned. I don't remember hardly anything. Right. I was just doing time. And I got my mark, and it opened a door, and I moved on, right? I dealt with the institution. So schooling is something quite different than a transformation of the soul, you know, a transformation of your fundamental cognitive attitude. Schooling is not about that. If it does want to change your fundamental cognitive attitude, for the most part, it wants to make it more pliant and more submissive. Whereas a really thinking person, a really educated person will become the opposite, right? I'm not going to be submissive. If you're trying to tell me some nonsense I don't understand and like I don't know where you got this stuff from. Like I had a student who I was friends with. I still think she's a cool person. She was like really central to our discussions because like I said, in our physical classes, we have really serious discussion. But at the end of class, she told me, and I was very disturbed, she's like, that the earth is flat. Now, as an educated person, when she tells me that the earth is flat, my response is like, whoa, hold up there. Right? Now, it could just be that I have one belief, she has another belief, and they're equally valid. But I don't think that's actually correct, right? It's not a matter of indifference whether the earth is flat or round. And I'm going to believe the story that has the better reasons behind it, right? That's the educated attitude. So it's not that I get submissive and I'm just like, well, you know, you're a person I like. I guess maybe the earth is flat. Like, no, I refuse to believe that the earth is flat. And the question I asked her was like, well, what about like the pictures from space? And I think she thought maybe the moon landing was fake too. And what about like global air travel? Like how do people move around the world? They do that, right? There are airports and we do see people from other parts of the world. How do they get here if the earth is not round, right? And she didn't have any answers for me, right? My point is simply that the mark of an educated person is not to be submissive. It is to be critical. And the more people try to tell me nonsense, the less I'm going to believe it, right? So schooling is not, generally speaking, about producing the critical attitude, although it does it by accident here and there. This is what James Baldwin is going to talk about later in our class. He'll call that the paradox of education, that schooling is set up just to reproduce the society, to make obedient workers. And yet, sort of by accident, or because there are people working within schooling who really are educators, and there are moments of real education happening, whether schooling likes it or not. As a result, sometimes it does produce very critical, thoughtful people who turn against the existing system, not in the sense of like, you know, terrorists who want to destroy it, but in the sense of critics who want to understand it, to determine what is good or bad about it, and especially what is good or bad about it from our perspective, and then who might be able to deploy their understanding in an endeavor to change it. So that tendency, that critical tendency, which can become a part of social action, that comes from education. It doesn't come from schooling. So this class is about schooling versus education. Okay, so like I said, if we were in a physical room, I would be drawing your attention to the physical rituals that we're doing. And they're not just physical, right? They're mental and they're behavioral. You know, they're like, okay, this week we're going to look at bell hooks. Bell hooks text confronting class in the classroom. I guess there are like two key questions to address in there. One is, how come in most classroom settings, nobody talks about class, economic class? It's like it's a blind spot. It's like a non-entity that most of us are not supposed to talk about. Why? And then secondly, what about the way that you like code switch when you come through the doorway into a classroom and the way you code switch again when you go out that doorway? think about how your vocabulary changes, right? There's certain words you'll say in the hallway, but you won't say in the classroom, generally speaking. There are certain like decibel volumes that you'll use talking with your friends when you're meeting up for lunch. And they would never be used. You'd never talk that loud in a classroom. This is all part of like the hidden curriculum, as Giroux will call it and Illich will call it. It's all a part of that ritual that I'm talking about, right? So that's what we're looking at in this class critically, is to unpack that ritual. But now, in this semester, the second time that I am running this class, and again, I'll leave this this lecture, this recorded lecture up, so in the future, I guess that won't be true. But this time around, we're doing it online, right? So there is no ritual of the classroom, and there is no classroom. I think this is something that we should discuss as we go along, and I invite you, please email me anytime you have a thought on this class, and I will give you 2 points of extra credit / participation credit every time you do it, every time you have a thought, you know, about the class. Start up a conversation with me, and I will reply, and maybe we can have something that is human and actually thoughtful, like an actual discussion. That'd be really cool, you know, because what's happening instead is a new ritual. Call it the ritual of asynchronous schooling. In this ritual, we practice having no connection with one another at all. And the shifts in language and decorum that used to occur as we walked into the classroom, now they're happening as we like get onto that discussion board. And we're going to write some stuff that is not how we would talk to our friends and not how we would talk to our families and not how we would talk to our coworkers. It's going to be a tone of voice that we reserve special for this new asynchronous ritual, right? And I'm just urging you to fight all this stuff. The model of education that is recommended in this class is liberation pedagogy. Liberation pedagogy, pedagogy means a theory or a practice, or a theory and a practice of how to do educating, right? How do we as educators educate? That is our pedagogy. Liberation pedagogy says education happens best when we informally discuss respectfully as an egalitarian, frankly spoken group. And last semester we had a really good version of this. We had 20 people sitting in a circle, and everybody could say whatever was on their mind, and we spoke very honestly, and we tried not to inhabit the roles that this institution called schooling gives us. I tried to demonstrate that, you know, in my DNA, I'm not a professor. I'm a dude called Matt, right? I have different interests. You know, I'm sitting right now in my office studio, and I've got my guitars and my drum kit and my synthesizers. Like, this is the other part of my life. My PhD, by the way, that is supposed to make you, you know, respect me as if I knew what I was talking about, it's in music. My master's is in philosophy. But these are not the things that make me who I am, right? Like, I'm a dad. I'm a lecturer, which means that I'm constantly precarious in terms of my employment. I'm constantly fighting to get more work. I'm constantly freaking out about, like, you know, whether I have to take another loan. I am part of the working class, just like you. Anyway, so in liberation pedagogy, we do what we can to meet one another as humans. And then as a democratic group, we even address questions about how grading and classroom decorum, if there needs to be any discussion about that and so on. How are those things going to happen? We make those decisions as a group. So how are we supposed to do liberation pedagogy when we never meet at all? I don't know the answer to that question. This semester, this summer session, will perhaps be an answer to that question, or a non-answer to that question. I guess the way I'm approaching it is that, like, honestly, this class will be less a radical class than it was last semester, because all you can really do is listen to my lectures, look at my notes, read my stuff, and then submit some things, right? And I get that's the game that we're playing, but it's a game, right? And I hope that somehow out of the schooling game, we can be subversive enough and intelligent enough and willful enough to actually produce some moments of education. Okay, that said, very practical thing. What do you have to do for this class to get that grade that you're really trying to get? Because you're trying to get the grade so you can get the credit, so you can get the job, right? And I'm trying to run the class so I can get paid so that I can keep my house, right? So we're both actually economic actors trying to achieve economic goods and struggling with economic conditions. And we're doing this through the institution at present of schooling. Okay, in this little ritual game we're playing, by which you're going to get a grade and I'm going to get paid, here's the stuff you got to do, because I'm the boss, right? And instead of giving you a wage, I give you a grade. We should challenge this stuff. But for now, that's where it stands. I'm going to pay you with that grade if and only if you do the reading every week, a discussion forum, 3 sets of essay responses. And then there's some optional stuff that you can do, which I would recommend, because it's like an easy way to get 10 points over and over and over. You can get up to 60 points this way. So you can get well above 100 points for this class. You see, I hate grades. I think grades are wrong. I got good grades all the time. I'm a very good student, very good reader. It's not that. It's that I think they're for segregating you. I think they're for the boss, and I don't work for the boss. Anyway, so I've set it up so that you can get up to like 150 points for this class, and the A is still 100, right? So if you did everything that I've set up in this class, you would pretty much be guaranteed an A. And you can do that by, in addition to doing the 3 sets of essays, do as many as you can make time for of these so-called short papers, each one of which is worth 10 points. So there'll be things like, you know, reflect on a good or a bad class that you had in the past. Just talk about it and then think about what made it good or bad. So these prompts are on the syllabus, and you'll find them also on the short paper prompts themselves. I think that's it. So do the reading, discuss at the end of the week, 3 times in the semester, hand in an essay set, and ideally through the semester, hand me as many of those short papers as you can, because they're just going to be boosting your grade.